Hi, Brendan.
Greetings, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast, number 213, going today on a fine, non-rainy day. It's amazing. I feel like I haven't had one in a little while. It's been nice. It has been a little cold, so I don't know. I'm bundled up in front of the microphone. I could turn the heat on, but I'm being kind of cheap today, I guess.
I'm currently wearing fuzzy slippers.
Nice. Nice.
That aren't mine.
Excellent. Well, we're recording on, it's like I said, it was episode 213. Still going. We still have the a couple episodes that are special, and they may even be the same episode coming up soon. We have our Bakhtun in Review episode coming, and we have our 216th episode coming. If you don't know why that's special, please listen back to insert episode here, and we'll fill you in. But in the meantime, we have lots to talk about, so let's get right in here and talk about Norway. We actually don't have Jürgen on the show with us this week. Amazingly, but if we did, we would probably ask him about this, because in Norway, they are looking to shut down FM terrestrial broadcasts. And so they have something like 5 FM stations, or at least that's what it looked like in the article. I might be wrong, but they have deprecated FM in favor of DAB, digital audio broadcasting, which is, I believe, still in the, it's in a similar band of radio, but in, you know, instead of being analog, where you can just kind of hook up a wire and listen to it, the digital audio broadcasting requires you to have a specific thing of hardware that will translate the stuff into sound. So back in the day, you used to be able to just, you could literally just string up a wire and hook that up to a speaker. And that's how, if you could tune it to the right thing, you could hear whatever the audio broadcast is. Now you have to have some kind of digital to analog conversion to play that. And I guess they've had digital audio broadcasting for quite a while. I know it was, I think it's the standard in the UK. But in Norway, they've had it for enough time, so says the people in charge of radio and broadcasting, and they're just going to turn off all of the FM stations and then reuse those bands for something else, probably cellular communications, which I know they've... the spectrum for that is always kind of ever present and growing, at least in the United States. So what that means, though, is that a lot of people probably are going to have, you know, radios that do nothing.
Yeah, they can either buy a new one or spend money on an adapter kit, which apparently is between 100 and 200 euros.
Huh, I'm surprised that that stat was in euros, because they use Norwegian kroner there, which is...
Well, it's also a 1,000 to 2,000 kroner.
Okay.
I figured if I said it in kroners, no one except perhaps Jürgen would know what the hell I was talking about.
And I don't know, euros still don't make sense to me, so it's money. There's money involved in getting this to work. I know in the U.S., they've kind of played around with digital broadcasting over, you know, terrestrial radio. So there is HD radio, which you can pick up if you have the right kind of hardware. But they also still are broadcasting on the analog signal that's the same kind of FM frequency. And they do some fanciness with multiplexing to get that to work. But it means that you can still listen to the radio for free, which I think is interesting and still a thing. I think the move to digital does make a difference in sound quality. And there is some programming, like for each FM station, you can have something like 5 or 10 like substations that kind of come in after it, and most do like one or two other stations just to have something different to listen to. This
you
is
know
all...
it's also a great alternative, podcasts. It's like digital radio.
That's also a thing. I don't have a satellite radio system in my car, because I refuse to pay for radio. But I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I recommend the Not a Thing podcast. It's a thing, and it's looking for sponsors in case you're looking for a place to give money to at the beginning of the year. The Not a Thing podcast is still looking for his first sponsor after 213 episodes. We've still not had one, but if you would like to be that one, let us know. If you'd like to be on the show and talk about the death of FM radio in Norway, please let us know. Tweet at us, Facebook us, all that kind of stuff. Leave notes or leave comments in the show notes, which we will post every show at notathingpodcast.com. I think shutting down FM isn't necessarily bad in and of itself. I mean, there is another alternative. It will kind of suck to have people move over to that, but I don't think it's bad. I think having radio that you can listen to that's free is a thing and should be a thing. Especially in Norway, where it's like real kind of cold and boring otherwise. Sorry, Jürgen. Sorry. But I mean, I guess, you know, he got out of there when he could. Now that he lives in the United States, he can listen to radio whenever he wants.
Yeah, you can hear about the new president.
Ah. Oh, and that's also happening this week. We'll probably have some thoughts about that. Maybe. We'll see. There's a lot going on regarding that, the inauguration. This week, there's also a ton of marches happening on the day of, and then the day after, the Women's March in Washington, D.C. has spawned something like 300 sister marches that are happening all around the country. There's at least four in the Bay Area that I know of, San Francisco, San Jose, Santa Cruz, and Oakland. There are probably more. I mean, 300 is a lot, and so that distributes kind of nicely. We may even be taking part in one. Maybe. We'll see.
That's what it's looking like.
Yeah,
it should be. Depending on weather.
It'll be an interesting week and weekend. If you've been following the news regarding that, good for you. I have been, unfortunately, kind of not following it, only because I feel like it's really, really, really messed up, and I'm trying to stay sort of positive around things, but it's real hard. It's real hard. It's still, I think we talked about this right after the election, I think the inauguration is going to like kind of reopen all of those kind of wounds for people.
Yeah, it's not really feeling better.
No, not yet. But hopefully there'll be some interesting stuff that comes out of that that makes it onto the show, and maybe our show won't get shut down in relation to it. But speaking of shutting down, and this is actually somewhat related to the show, Google is looking to shut down the Hangouts API. And Hangouts is their video chat kind of thing, which was deployed on their Google Plus platform, which was sort of their attempt at having a social network competing with like Facebook. That still exists, although just barely in my understanding. But the Hangouts portion of it was used quite a lot by a bunch of people. I mean, we use it. We're using it right now, in fact, to record this show. But the Hangouts API is something kind of an extension of that. So API stands for Application Programming Interface, and it's a way to kind of build on an existing thing. So initially, Google Hangouts had an API, and a bunch of companies were like, hey, Google Hangouts sounds good. The video and the sound quality is good. Let's build on top of that and build applications. And that was the original intent of having an API, is that companies could make their own video chat system or something that integrated the Hangouts system, so they wouldn't have to build like a video chat system. And it looks like Google is turning that off. I know that they've announced, or they've not only announced, but released a couple other applications that kind of do the same thing. So there's Duo, which I believe is for computers, that does like one-to-one video chat. And then there's Allo, which is their messenger kind of thing, and that runs only on mobile devices. So they went and fragmented their systems kind of wildly, and now they're going to, getting around to turn off the Hangouts API. It's very possible that they will turn off Hangouts altogether, which would suck, because then we'd have to pick something else to record our show with. But it is interesting and weird, you know, how those decisions are made, especially from a company, again, that used to do just search. Remember that? Google did just search. That was so long ago. And yet, really not that long ago.
Now it is search.
Yes. The internet moves fast, is what we're trying to say. We'll see how that goes. If we end up sounding slightly different because we're recording through a different thing, then that means we probably picked a worse thing to record with. But I'm sure we'll find something. There are a number of chat systems out. If you know of one that's really good, let us know, because we'll probably have to make that decision you know, in the future. I think other than for this show, and which we've done, you know, 213 of them, so, you know, that's a not insignificant number, but I think I've only used Hangouts personally maybe twice, maybe three times. So I don't know how popular it is. I just like it from a you know, ease of use standpoint, but there might be other things that are even easier to use. I've just not done the research. Let's see. Moving on. If you, like I said, if you know any kind of video or even just audio chat things over the internet that work real well, do let us know. We'd love to kind of connect with you and figure that out. We're going to move over to a different thing on the internet. This is the Tor browser. So Tor stands for the Onion Router, and it's a web browser that kind of masquerades your connection by kind of sending it and all of the other connections with it and distributing it across all of the other people that are using Tor. So it anonymizes your connections and searches and things like that. And it's been around for a while for desktops, but I guess a few years ago, a developer made an iOS and an Android browser version or mobile version of the browser, and it was, I think, 99 cents on iOS for a few years, and it did reasonably well. There were a bunch of people that were downloading it, and then he decided to release it for free. So now the Tor browser for iOS is free. And he said he did it in just because he thinks the climate of surveillance and everything else is getting more and more kind of hostile, and something that people should have alternatives for if they want them. And so he made the web browser free, which I think is fantastic. I have downloaded it and I use it, and it's real slow, but that's because that's how Tor works. Sometimes you have to pay the price of privacy by having it slow, but it works great and it looks kind of normal. It's best for because it's distributing your all of your requests over multiple machines. What that means is anything that requires it to maintain a session or a state about you, doesn't work because you're essentially masquerading as multiple people trying to browse a website. In some respects, that's cool, but it also means that you couldn't use it if you were, you know, going to a website to go buy something or anything that requires a login is a little weird because then you're kind of giving up your anonymity because you're logging into something. So anything that you need to browse without an identity, so like browsing a website just to read the content on it or news or things like that, I think it's neat. I think it's nice to have that kind of available, and it's much nicer to have it free. Yay, free. It's a thing. the Tor kind of network is really interesting, and we've talked about it on the show before, mostly because intelligence agencies are trying like the Dickens to crack into it because it's it does actually work. It their protocol works by, like I said, distributing the requests among all the different users of it. So you can't pinpoint any one user for any kind of more than one request. And even doing that isn't enough to really tell you what's going on. So if you wanted to snoop it, currently you'd have to like snoop so much traffic that you could tell like where, you know, all the, you know, you could like link up all of the things that were there, but that would be so many machines that it's impractical to do so. Doesn't mean it's impossible, just means that it's very difficult. And some of those agencies that are looking for that are in the UK, where they have signed what is being called the Snoopers Charter by a bunch of people that are in the UK that are concerned about privacy and stuff like that. I think it's called the Investigatory Powers Act, like the full kind of name of it. But our next story this week is about a crowdfunding campaign to sue the UK on the behalf of really people who like the internet to turn that off. So there's a crowdfunding campaign on Crowd Justice, which I'd never heard of, but looks really interesting. It's crowdfunding specifically for social justice and internet rights, and generally any kind of abusive power that is somewhat, it's not always, but it's often related to the internet and the kind of weird map that has to be navigated about, you know, is this violating anybody's rights or not? Usually it is, because the internet is new and different and people haven't figured out all the laws about it yet. And all the laws are being made by people that don't necessarily understand the internet, like the Snoopers Charter. So the big thing about the Snoopers Charter is that the intelligence agencies that are involved are building a profile based on every user of the internet in the UK. And they kind of do whatever metrics they need to do to kind of figure out and identify who everyone is. And then they just keep all of that data about where you go, what websites you go to. They probably pull in a lot of demographic information and things that you like. They use all the different services that they can. I like to think of it as it's like the profile that Facebook probably is building of you, except now the government can see it. So it's not just being used for advertising. It's being used so you can be watched by the government. And this is in the UK. You'd think, you know, the whole George Orwell 1984 thing, you know, I'm pretty sure he was a British author. And yet this, and then the use of CCTV cameras kind of ubiquitously to see everything in the city of London, you'd think all of these things would add up to like, maybe we shouldn't do this, but unfortunately that's happening in the UK. So the Crowd Justice campaign was formed to declare that not a thing, and hopefully that kind of works. I think there's an EU, it's a European Union body that declared it illegal. So it's a good thing that, I guess, Britain is exiting the EU. Or something, maybe. We'll see. That also is something that's going to get looked at. Kind of speaking of European countries and disconnecting things, we're going to move over to France, where I just learned this, but on the 1st of January, they enacted a law that is essentially the right to disconnect. And when it was first kind of explained to me, the way the law works is at the end of your day, you have the right to not check email anymore. So at the end of your workday is ended. So any work communication shouldn't pick up again until you go back into work the next day. And I think on the face of that, that's really interesting. I think they're legislating a kind of work-life balance, which I don't know if that is even possible, but that's at least the way the law was explained to me initially. Turns out it's even more forceful than that, because what it is also saying is that not only does the employee have the right to not read email if they don't want to on weekends or after hours, it also says that the employers have to work out a policy to limit mails that are sent out after hours or after a certain time or on a weekend or things like that. And I think that is more fraught. I mean, it's already weird to think that I could, you know, that from a legislation point of view, it's like I'm protected if I don't want to read email after hours. But it's a little weird, I think, for the company to be restricted in not being able to send things after hours. That part of it makes it a little weird, because if you don't, it's I mean, you can set up your mail so it doesn't notify you, but I don't think a notification is necessarily an intrusion of my my evening. I can always click the little switch on my phone so it doesn't, you know, make noise or buzz or anything like that. But
there, I guess it would be more addressing the expectation that you're going to check that.
Yeah. Which I think is more of a cultural thing. Work culture thing in that company, and also kind of related to your job. Like if I were doing that and I worked in, if I still worked in IT, that wouldn't work at all. I would say almost all of the phone calls that I would get on my cell phone from work or emails that I would get after hours were because something was really, really broken and needed to be fixed. And I think that would be, I think that there have to be, and I the way I understand it, there aren't exceptions for different kinds of jobs or different notification cycles and things like that. So I think it's, like I said, I think it's interesting from the employee point of view. I think it's weird from the employer point of view. So that probably has to get kind of looked at and figured out. I mean, I would love to leave work at work and not worry about it. I think that's a thing. I think people definitely work too much. This is coming from a guy who essentially did not work all last year.
Hey, you would have a good perspective on that.
Hashtag fun employment. I do have a job now, so that's fun and exciting. I think the work-life balance on that one is okay, at least so far. I can get away with not or looking at mail maybe once a night, and it's fine. And usually it's only because my day starts pretty early generally, and so having kind of some advance warning of where I need to be is usually the only thing I care about. But it's not... I thankfully have never had to work in a job where, or I don't think this is the kind of job where I have to, you know, be up at all hours of the morning, which is good. That's a thing. Work-life balance is a thing. Whether it can be legislated or not, we'll look into that. Kind of moving over into a different kind of thing that's helping, I think, with work-life balance. There's an AI that's being produced. And usually we listen to stuff about AI and go, oh my God, it's going to do something terrible. Not a thing. But this one is, I think, really interesting. So the name of the AI is called Augury. So it's A-U-G-U-R-Y. Augury is the old-timey name for when they would cut apart, like, animals and, you know, use it to determine signs about the future and stuff like that. So it's it's a little weird, but it's using AI to tell the future, specifically for mechanical things. So engines and machines and robots in factories and stuff like that. What their API is supposed to be is you record those sounds that the machine makes. You record it and then you upload it into their system, their database, and it analyzes the sound that it is, and then will determine based on the number of machines that it's heard that do the same job and all sorts of stuff, how likely it is that machine is going to fail in some period of time. So it listens for, like, noise transients, like knocks or pings that you might not be able to hear. It has to, you know, obviously listen over a long period of time to kind of get a baseline for that sound. But I find this fascinating from a machine learning standpoint. This is something that actually sounds somewhat useful and not weird. At least not, as long as it is not also listening to all the people that walk past the machine.
No one would ever twist that technology to do that.
No. But it is really interesting to think that it could listen to sounds and then kind of determine it. I remember back when Car Talk used to be a thing on NPR, that one of my favorite things was when people would call in about their cars and then they would imitate the sound that the car made in order to help them diagnose what kind of
I remember that
what kind of problems they were having. So it's like, yeah, it makes a sound that's kind of like a and I think it just goes to show that we're a very you know, I mean, sense, the different senses are important, and being able to kind of pull all of those together, I think, you know, makes for a good picture of information. And so I think it's interesting that some folks have decided to extend that to kind of machines in general. I'm sure all of that stuff is on the up and up. Hopefully they're not using it to record people as well. But I think I think it's really funny also because I remember years ago, this was back in my IT system administration days when people would have monitoring dashboards for all of their you know, hundreds of computers or thousands of computers that they would take care of. And so you'd have lots of graphs and charts and everything like that. And there was a company, or I don't know if it was a company or just a bunch of developers, but there was a project that was called Peep. And what it did was you would feed it all of the inputs of your monitoring dashboard, and then it would turn that into a, like, kind of white noise that you could just have on your computer, on your monitoring computer. So you just it would put it into a speaker, and it was called the Network Auralyzer. And what it would do is it would do sort of what this AI is doing, is that it would translate all of the network traffic and CPU levels and memory into a sound. And so if you were working all day, you don't have to necessarily look at the screens to know what's going on. You would, because you're generally very attuned to, like, differences in sound, and you could tell, oh, this sounds a little odd today, or the network sounds a little odd, and it literally is sounding odd, then you could look up at the screen and figure out, oh, traffic is spiking here or there or whatever. I think it's nice to kind of indulge other senses. That's part of the reason I think we have a podcast. Also, because I think a vlog, which is not a thing. Don't even. I hate that word, but I think it's preferable to less, you know, having less, you know, full sensory kind of experience. I don't know if people can handle a full sensory experience with you and me, Brendan. I think that might be too much.
You're not supposed to stare at the sun.
But in any case, using senses is a thing. I think we're going to move over to using one more sense, and that is sight. So we are going to move over to video, but this podcast will not be a video podcast. Instead, we're going to talk about how Kodak, which had discontinued their film kind of outputs and we're going completely digital, are actually going back and making film again. So they're,
which I'm pretty sure we discussed in insert episode here.
I'm sure
back in 2012 when they discontinued it, and now we're reporting on them bringing it back.
So they're bringing back the Ektachrome brand, which was their kind of flagship brand, which was endorsed by you know, National Geographic magazine, and it was loved by photographers all over. They're specifically bringing back the color reversal version of the film, which I had to do a little reading about what it is, but it's a film that what it produces is a positive rather than a negative. So instead of taking that and then developing it into the picture that you want, you can take that and then immediately project, use it for a projection, you know, for on a wall or whatever else. But in short, they're bringing film back. So analog media is back again.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're going to change our distribution model to cassettes anytime soon. But you will be the first to hear about it on the Not a Thing podcast if we do. I don't think this is specifically targeted towards hipsters who like kind of physical media and everything like that. I think this does seem to be for professional applications of photography, which is nice that Kodak is thinking of that still and working with that. They are clearly a recognized brand. I don't know if the quality is necessarily going to be there yet, but I mean, they own all of the intellectual property to make it done right, so it should be doable. There is something to be said, I think, for how film looks versus how kind of a digital photo looks. Although I notice it more in movies than I do in like film and photography. There is something to be said for having like a printed photo on photo paper, you know, with all of the fancy inks and stuff, versus seeing it on a screen. So that's, I think that's a thing, but I don't know how much of that comes from the film and how much of that is from the actual printing. But I do know that, like, analog film versus you know, any kind of digitally processed film does look different enough to me. We've talked about that on the show enough with, I think when we talked about The Hobbit and their high data rate stuff, way back when we talked with, I think it was Tom Watson, way, way back.
Yes.
There's something about representating. That's bad. That's not a thing. Representing motion and video and stuff. I think there's advances in that are not necessarily 100% thought out about how it works. Using or not turning off sport mode while you're watching a movie is not a thing. Please learn how to turn off the 120 hertz mode when you're watching a movie. It looks really strange. We're going to go to our last story this week, which is great because I'm probably going to need this sometime soon. This is researchers have figured out a new use for stem cells. And what they're using stem cells for is to regrow teeth. So regrow specifically the dentin in the teeth, which is the stuff underneath the enamel, which is the stuff that gets cavities and stuff like that. So it used to be that once you got a cavity, you had a cavity, and then they had to fill it with, you know, something. It was mercury, and they figured out that was bad, and they used porcelain and other stuff like that, and it's a thing. It's good. It does generally require drilling, which sucks, but this is supposedly a way that they can regrow some of the material. They can't regrow the enamel. That still needs to get figured out, but regrowing the kind of stuff underneath the enamel that builds up the structure of the tooth, they figured out a way to do it with stem cells. And oddly enough, they figured this out with that one of the other things that they use to regrow it is a medicine that was targeted towards folks with Alzheimer's. And I'm not sure how they figured this out. I guess they kind of just noticed that the Alzheimer's patients had better teeth or something. I don't know how this connection was made, but a medicine that was traditionally used for Alzheimer's patients, when used in conjunction with these the stem cells that are injected into the affected area of the tooth, regrow the dentin that's in the tooth. The article does mention that you still have to, you'll still probably have to have things drilled and worked on in order to, you know, make the cap for the tooth, because the enamel is still going to decay. But anything to have less drilling. Let me tell you, root canal, not a thing. Don't do that. If you can help it, don't do that. But medical science marching along kind of in a weird way. Like I said, I really don't know how they figured out that an Alzheimer's drug could be related to this. But I'm glad they did, because anything to spend less time in the dentist chair, in my opinion. I really like my dentist, but I don't like sitting in that chair. We can just be like friends and stuff, right? Like, we don't have to do this like poking and sawing and all that noise. That's not a thing. But I believe that is our show for the week. If you want to catch up on any of this stuff that we talk about, look at the notes for the show that are embedded at notathingpodcast.com. Hopefully there's a link in the podcast that you're listening to, if you can see all that stuff. Otherwise, go, like I said, to notathingpodcast.com, and you can look back at this show or any of the other shows. Feel free to leave a comment there, or tweet at us, or Facebook us. Wave at us while we're running through the airport to our next flight. However you get a hold of us, it's fun. It's a thing. We'd love to have kind of more inputs to the show. If you would like to be a contributor to the show, let us know about things that you think are interesting. Or if you would really like to talk about it, feel free to be a guest on the show. That's fun and exciting too. We may not be using Google Hangouts, depending on how that story kind of shapes up. But we'd be glad to have you on. We'd be glad to have you on. And like I said, we are marching towards a couple special episodes coming up. The 216th episode and the Backtoon.
Actually, we'd be beating Stargate SG-1.
That's the 216. Okay, so.
No, 215.
215. Oh, okay, even better.
They only did 214 episodes with two direct-to-DVD movies. And I feel like with our A and B episodes and our zero episodes, 215, we would be passing them.
Well, we're looking forward to that for sure. That's just in a couple short weeks. If you'd like to be part of those shows or anything, just let us know, and it'd be fun. And Brennan, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.